Poofing out like a 80s action figure. Welcome, everyone, to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. That's Ian Ferguson with the Duck Dynasty beard. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about the Switch is doing okay. It's doing okay, the Nintendo Switch. We're talking about a video game from the mid-90s that we didn't know about, an arcade game that was revealed.
Yeah.
We'll also be talking about an update to the All Controller Kickstarter from years past that we almost forgot about, and a Patreon poll. Ian, how was your weekend? Was it good?
It was busy. It was real busy. I feel like we just sat down to do this podcast like yesterday.
We sat down for 248. This is 249, buddy. Can you believe that? 249.
249.
249 times at least, not counting the conventions and mini episodes we had to put up with each other. About 4.5 feet away from each other, 5 feet away.
It's wild. I can't believe
that's some wild stuff.
Wild stuff. Wild is one of those words that I fall back on.
you are correct.
Way too much. Anyway, yeah, weekend was good. Vani and I finished watching Avatar: The Last Airbender. I really enjoyed that show.
The series?
Yeah, I understand why people like it. We started.
Well, I'm glad, Ian.
Yeah.
Glad you're not flummoxed by that question.
We started the Night Stalker documentary.
Was it Night Stalker? I was thinking about the game Night Stalkers.
No.
The one I talked about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is it so far? You like it?
Yeah. I mean,
you know how it ends.
I had a period of time where I read up on the serial killers. I know about Richard Ramirez, but it's a very well done doc, and I think Netflix is really, obviously it's not. It's different directors and studios, I'm guessing, that are doing all these, but they've really got the four-part true crime limited series down cold. They do a really good job with that. Between like that one, the Ripper murders.
Did they do the disappearance of Madeline McCann? Did they do that one?
I think so.
Because that was really, really good.
That one I need to watch still. I heard the Aaron Hernandez one is good. Another four-part.
That's the one I didn't watch because I don't want to watch that one. For some reason, that one is kind of... I'm weirded out by that one. I can't explain why.
Look, I know I was the person... I've always been the person who's watched a lot of true crime, and I've always been the person who is kind of, like, weirdly disassociated from it. Like, we always joke and talk about how we can fall asleep watching, you know, like, Forensic Files or something like that.
It was eight episodes of the disappearance of Madeline McCann. There's a lot of stuff that happens, but go on.
Yeah. Sure. But as I'm getting older, and I think maybe it's just the fact that the pandemic is depressing and we've all been stuck inside, it has gotten a little bit harder to blow through some of this true crime stuff. Like, it's just, especially like the Night Ripper. Like, Richard Ramirez is a fucking psycho.
A Night Stalker, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just an absolute.
Oh, he's the worst one.
Yeah.
Like I even said, like, because there was no method to any of what he was doing, everything.
Right. So, yeah, it weighed on me more than most true crime does. And it's good. Maybe it means I'm becoming slightly more human.
That it's affecting you?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I just think it's interesting because the stories are more captivating than fiction.
Yes.
Truth is stranger than fiction. It's more entertaining most of the time.
I think that's honestly where I started to get more into nonfiction was when I was, you know, reading true crime and various documentaries. I'm like, I like fiction, don't get me wrong, but you get crazy stories from real life all the time.
Real life is less predictable. Well, I'm watching a movie now, or I'm watching, not because I also like to write, but I know where the story is going to go. I'm rarely like surprised by.
Well, because in real life there isn't, you know, there's not three acts that you have to play through.
Yeah, and it's not like, oh, that guy we saw at the ATM ends up being the killer. Like
no,
that doesn't happen. That shit doesn't happen. You don't remember something from 3 weeks ago that you remember in the last 20 seconds to, you know, solve the case. That shit doesn't happen. So. It's like true boots to the ground police work, and that's why I like that. I thought you liked it. It's like these are what we went through. This is us painstakingly trying to solve these horrific crimes that keep piling up.
And I'm weird. Like, I I definitely have my issues with cops, especially beat cops. But detective work is something that is interesting to me. There are certain things that, you know, you're watching, like, say, the Night Ripper one, Night Stalker one, and you're like, that's... It's impressive. You know,
you need people to solve this shit.
The whole thing that... And it drove me nuts when I was, you know, reading about them the first time, but the fucking... the dentist part of it was genius and also heartbreaking in terms of how they missed it.
I brought that up when I talked about it, like they missed out on him because the LAP fucked up.
Yep.
That was a problem.
A couple times the LAPD fucked up.
So because it was the LAPD, which oversees the county, and then you have the local sheriff office and everything, and they have to work together, and they just wanted to fucking get the prints off the car, and the LAPD was stonewalling them.
Yep.
Just to get fucking prints. And then it was like there were so many times where they could have caught the guy and would have probably prevented deaths, unfortunately, and assaults. And
anyway, other than that, I made a really good pork bone stock.
Oh, okay, well, that's good.
That's what else I did.
Made a stock,
a delicious tonkatsu stock, milky white, full of fat.
Intermittent fasting,
delicious,
milky and full of fat.
Milky and full of
fat.
That's
how thick my quick Pat was. Absolutely, I drank too much milk.
How about you? What did you do this weekend?
I caught up on... I had to do some, we'll just say, some bookkeeping for the N64 project. And then I played... God, I always forget the name of the fucking thing. I played and reviewed... I always get confused in order. Asteroids Hyper 64. I knew 64 was in there, but I always give it Hyper. Which is a remake... a reimagining of the original Asteroids, which is one of my favorite classic arcade games. I've said it before. It's probably my top four or five arcade games that I love. And I always play it in the arcade. And it's a good remake. I mean, they did as much as they possibly could with Asteroids, keeping it on a single screen. You fly around and shoot asteroids. I mean, they did as much as you possibly could. So I gave it a positive review. I actually enjoyed it. I was like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah, I know people who have enjoyed it. I mean, when it came out, I don't know that I would have paid whatever the full retail price was.
Well, that's what I'm discovering. It's like I'm not looking at old past reviews to glean what they thought necessarily, but a lot of this stuff is like, I don't think it's worth $60. People like 20 years ago were saying shit like that. And I get that.
And that's fair.
That shouldn't factor into is the good game good or not.
You know,
that's a value proposition.
Right. I mean? And that's always been my problem with reviews. Like, you know, there's going to be a lot of people when Pokemon Snap comes out who are like, it's not worth the $60. Well, maybe not to you, but it's probably going to be worth it to me.
No one says that about movies. Well, it's not worth $15 to see the movies. Like, no, is it good or not? Is the song, is the album worth buying? You know, is that's what it comes down. That's what it should be.
Explain what it is and, you know, we'll make the decision whether or not we want to pay that amount for it or wait for it to go down in price.
That's moot in 2020 for these games anyway, but then I could see why it's like, don't pay $60 for, you know, a game 20 years ago that it's spiritually the same game. It's just, you know, a fresh coat of paint.
The $5 that it costs now, though, it's like,
if this game came out nowadays, it'd be a $5 game.
It'd be a $10 eShop game. You can buy it used $7.99. For $5.
It wouldn't be a free, this isn't quite like a free mobile game. It's like a little step above that to me, but it would be sort of that sort of realm there. So what was I talking about?
What you did this weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's what I did. I also checked out the GameStop craziness.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't talk about it last Tuesday. That's when it was heating up. It was heating up because, to me, it was more of a financial topic, a really strange niche financial topic, versus gaming. Because if you swapped
out... This is not a gaming topic at all.
It really isn't.
I had this conversation with someone in a Lyft yesterday. I was like, it could
have
been...
In a Lyft that came up? Jesus Christ.
Oh, it was a good conversation, too. The guy was really good. We were both on the same page. We were both for the little guy. I like it when I have a Lyft driver where we can really...
for the little guy talking
We can really converse, you know, about something. But that's what I was trying to explain to him, because he was older and he didn't really understand games. I'm like, it doesn't...
It has nothing to do with GameStop.
Absolutely any other stock that is being shorted.
It only has anything to do with GameStop due to the fact that GameStop is outlook long-term is so bad that so many investors and hedge funds were shorting it. That's where it begins and ends with GameStop. So it has nothing to do with the outlook of GameStop. The stock increases have nothing to do with the potential success of GameStop, other than the company potentially gets a cash infusion by people putting money in, but it's going to come out eventually anyway. The company is still in the same spot unless they can radically rehaul and go digital, which I guess is what the Chewy guy wants to do, but I don't think you're ever going to get back up to the stature of having all the physical locations versus you're competing digitally with everyone else, including digital game sales. So it's like it's tough. Anyway, so the volatility of the stock is a story, but again, it really has very little to do with GameStop itself. So, do you want to explain?
I can give a basic, using
the Mario ball. You want to explain what a short is?
I had an example.
Okay, I have an example,
and I think it was one online too. And this is not perfect. You can slay me, but basically, what happened is shorting a stock. Hedge fund managers look at something and they go, "Okay." Basically, they borrow a stock. They have to give it back by a certain date.
Ms. Pac-Man. Okay.
So I want to borrow Pat's bike.
His Mario ball.
I want to borrow Pat's Mario ball. Someone offers me, I can sell the Mario ball for $5.
Ms. Pac-Man wants it for $5.
Ms. Pac-Man wants it for $5. I sell the Mario ball to Ms. Pac-Man for $5 because I think I'm going to be able to rebuy the Mario ball for $2.
Right. You borrowed it from me, basically, to sell it. So
I borrowed
she has it
from Pat.
I don't have any money yet.
Sold it to Ms. Pac-Man.
He has it.
My for $5.
Cat. Okay.
Because I feel like I'm going to be able to go and buy another Mario ball for $2.
To give back to me.
To give back to Pat.
And
so
keep the profit.
So not only do I get to borrow Pat's Mario ball, which is totally sweet, but I get to make a little money on the side.
Sure. If the price goes down.
But all of a sudden, I sell the Mario ball to Ms. Pac-Man, and all of a sudden, everyone loves these fucking Mario balls. And now I can't find a Mario ball to save my life, and the Mario balls are going for like $200, $300.
So at some point, Pat needs his Mario ball back. I need it back at some point. I can wait, but at some point, I'm owed it back.
In real life, you can usually push that deadline along. In stocks, there is a deadline that has to be back, essentially. Sure. That has to be paid back. So what happened is people noticed that GameStop was shorting the stocks. Basically, people were borrowing these stocks and selling them
off. To an obscene degree.
140%
of the available stock. So imagine if I'm owed a Mario ball. Ian can't find one to give back to me while he's already losing money on the replacement, and the price keeps going up because everyone's buying Mario balls.
Right.
That's the situation. You can't even get out with a huge loss. It's compounding on itself.
Right. I can't stop the bleed.
So if we'll just say Danny Sullivan knows that Ian's in a bind to get a Mario ball, Danny's like, well, fuck you, Ian. I'm going to buy as many Mario balls as I see to drive the price up even more. And not only screw you, but the price of the Mario balls go up if I hold on to them.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening, in essence.
So, yeah, basically, the people on Wall Street Bets, the Reddit channel, got wind that GameStop was horribly shorted. So they went out and, through a concerted effort, bought as much GameStop as they could.
And drove the price wacky.
Drove the price
from like
up.
From $20 to over $300.
Destroyed some hedge funds in the process. Some people made some life-changing money. I mean, this is, I think, going to be a watershed moment. This is going to be something that is going to be studied for years and looked at, and I'm sure regulation is coming because of it.
Well, the problem that I learned from my friend who knows a little about finance, it wasn't just also the fact that it was shorted. They were leveraged shorts, meaning they were borrowing money, these hedge funds, borrowing money to do the short. So it's if you had to borrow money to buy the Mario ball from me, from Ms. Pac-Man. So you owe back that, and you owe me the Mario ball and buying back, plus money to the people that gave you it to get the Mario ball. So you're compounding on top of it how much you're getting screwed. So Wall Street fought back, of course, because this is billions of dollars at stake. This is billions of dollars at stake. It's a fight between people running these hedge funds. Some of them are millionaires, billionaires. That's what they do for a living, with regular people. So there was like shenanigans with the Robinhood app, where they basically disallowed you from buying any more GameStop stock. Not just that, because I bought a stock with Robinhood just to see what was going on. I also bought some AMC, because I actually believe AMC was getting shorted, not to the same amount, but AMC is going to come back anyway. But don't listen to my economic advice. I say that for legality. It's not a suggestion to buy or sell. But with my stock, when I went to the AMC stock, like with GameStop, it wouldn't even allow me to not just buy anymore. I couldn't even sell partially. Literally, it was click a button to close out your entire position. That cannot be legal. cannot be legal at all. And so there's going to be investigations looked into that, because they, what they allowed Robinhood, because a lot of people are trading through Robinhood, what they allowed was for some of these hedge funds to close their shorts out. The price went down from, I think, like 300 to 200. So they reshorted and got some of their money back, I believe, because no one else could buy. They closed out people from buying.
Yeah.
So market manipulation at its finest.
Yeah, right, it's there. Gross. Everyday Joe is allowed to lose it all on the stock market, but heaven forbid, anyone with money. Anyone rich, anyone with a hedge fund lose money.
But they're gaming the system.
The market's a free market when you get fucked, but it's not a free market when they get fucked. It's the whole socialism for me, but not for thee. That comes with the rich too.
It's the one thing that brought everyone together. Right and left, we're coming together to be like, this is fucking bullshit, because it's robbing you in plain sight.
Yeah.
With a gun, on the street with a gun.
I think that was also what I was talking to my Lyft driver yesterday. I noticed a lot of people thinking it was amusing until about midweek, when you could tell people were starting to really learn what was going on. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I think really ruffled feathers and got a lot of people pissed off was when they realized that they were selling borrowed things.
Yes.
And when you look at that, when you put it that way, and I mean, you explain it as simply as possible, that
it's not just stocks.
These are people selling things that they don't own on a whim. These people are the ones who will always tell you, don't use the fucking stock market like a casino. But that's exactly what they do. There's just such a precedent for this type of action that they don't think of it as that anymore. But it totally is. And it's totally how they work the market, and they fuck you over.
Sure. Sure. So this is what I'll say. I'm not going to recommend. I never recommend playing around with stocks. Plus, at this point, it might be too late to get in. But in theory, if there's still tons of shorts out there and more people buy, the price should go up in theory if there's enough shorts still where they can't get out and people keep buying and driving it up. In theory. And that's as far as I know. It's been going up and down. Be very, very careful with this stuff. I bought a single GameStop stock just for the hell of it, and to see if I could be potentially part of a funny class action lawsuit if they ever end up, going after Robinhood or something. Just for the hell of it, I bought a single stock of GameStop. Probably too high, but whatever. For one, I'm like, okay, let's see where this goes. But it was very interesting. You had Elon Musk talking about it. Today, Mark Cuban went on the Wall Street Bets Reddit and did an AMA and basically said, yeah, you guys, if you can hold. And, he's giving the guys advice about it, because he was like, fuck these hedge fund guys. Even guys like Mark Cuban are like, this is bullshit. The other guy from Shark Tank said, Kevin O'Leary, he's like, that's the risk these hedge fund guys take. They got to live with it. So, like, most reasonable people are like, you can't manipulate the market. If you take the wins, you got to take the losses. But they don't want to take the losses.
No.
They're okay, like I said, they're okay making tons of money with borrowed cash. Borrowed stocks on borrowed cash, which is so weird. That should be illegal.
I have a feeling, especially with how information gets around and now that this is happening, people are going to be seeking out info left and right for what stocks are currently being shorted the most. And I think what you're going to see is a lot of hedge funds being like, we can't fucking mess with this
anymore.
Oh,
it'll stop this. This is publicly available. You can look up these sort of things. But now they're going to be a little bit more careful not to. You're basically betting on companies to fail. That's basically what you're doing. Or at least, decrease what's going on. I'm not saying GameStop. You can talk about GameStop deserving it or not, but when they do it to such a huge amount to a company and everyone else finds out and takes advantage of it, I'll be on the side of the small guy when it comes to that.
Yeah.
So, all right. Speaking of scumbags, real quick, I don't talk about bad experiences with buyers too much, but I got taken for a ride by a buyer recently via Amazon, and this Christmas season I sold lots of N64 guidebooks. Not N64, that's the future. Super Nintendo and NES. And the post office was really bad around the holidays for everyone because of COVID. I think they had like 30% less people working in the postal system, tons of higher volume because people weren't going to stores. So if you ordered something in December or even early January, you weren't getting it for a while. I ordered something, I think, around December 14th. I didn't get it to like January 10th. That never happens. with a proposal. A proposal, you can say, is bad. You usually get something in like a week.
Yeah.
A little over a week. So there were some people, not a lot, but some people were like, hey, where's my book? Where's this? And I'm like, well, it's delayed. Even the website says that it's going to be delayed. That's about, I can't do anything about it. And most people were cool with that. Once I said, you know, it'll arrive. Because there would be updates where like it's on its way somewhere, and you wouldn't see another update for a week still. Literally, they couldn't process them enough. So one guy from Philadelphia, Joe or John, either way, I'm not going to say your last name. It was the same sort of interaction. It was like something you ordered like early January, and then 2 weeks later hadn't arrived yet. And I was like, well, there's some movement. It's on its way. And so he filed a claim against me. He filed a claim against me for the book, being that, well, it never showed up when it was still active on the tracking. And then the worst part about it is that he filed a claim, got his money back, and then the book arrived like the next day or within like 48 hours. And he knew it looking, he must have looked at the track and said, it's in movement. So I'm like, okay, that's bullshit. I'm going to file an appeal. I filed an appeal. And Amazon, even though I said, hey, he got the book, I can't do anything about this, I communicated with him, I lost the appeal. And the guy, if the guy had any fucking moral compass, would pay for the book that he basically stole from me. And that's like the first time that's ever happened to me where someone did something like that. And it just feels, I feel like fucking shit about something like that. It's not a woe is me, but it's like, come on, man, you're going to do that? Anyway.
Kind of shitty.
It's like the tracking's there. And Amazon screwed me too, because Amazon is like, well, it was shipped in a decent amount of time. It's just like, it was bullshit. So anyway, with that said, if you want to help replace it, go to ultimatenintendo.com, where you can buy the books and Ian's shiny enamel pin face right there, RBI baseball stickers, and more, and N64 book will be next year, probably. Yeah, it'll be next year. I'll die trying, but no pre-orders yet. And you can order it in Europe, the books at pukapukagames.co.uk, your source for Puka Puka and video games. It's an adorable little mascot there. I'm also going to be on Twitch Wednesday night, twitch.tv/contracode. Maybe Ian will show up one day and say hi while I watch 80s commercials there.
It's possible.
You know what I would have loved to watch, Ian? A Legend of Zelda Netflix series.
I would not have.
I think it would have been fun. It would have been great.
I just don't. I was talking about this with a coworker over the weekend, and I feel like we both agree that I don't think it would work. I really don't. I don't know what you're going to do with a silent protagonist. But
it wouldn't be silent.
Well, that's the problem. He wouldn't be, and I think that would be weird.
So it was in the works, according to Adam Conover, who's Adam Ruins Everything show. I met the man at SoCal, very nice fellow. And he did a podcast, and it was revealed that around 2014, a live-action Legend of Zelda TV series was in production at Netflix. It was at the same time Conover was working on a claymation Star Fox adaptation for College Humor, which was supported by Shigeru Miyamoto. So the comedian reveals that the Legend of Zelda project at Netflix was canceled due to leaks, which I believe we mentioned on the podcast way back, and God, that seems so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But Nintendo was upset by it. Conover suspects that someone within Nintendo leaked the Legend of Zelda adaptation, which caused Nintendo to cancel a slate of projects, including the Zelda adaptation and Star Fox claymation shows. We were deprived of that, Ian.
I really would have liked to have seen the Star Fox claymation shows. I love claymation. And I like the Star Fox characters. I mean, honestly, to me, I'm not sad about not getting to see a Zelda adaptation, but I know people want to see it. I just think that's burning it all to the ground.
What?
That's burning it all to the ground for leaks. Nintendo canceling everything for a couple of leaks.
Oh, yeah. That's a...
Sends a message, though,
It sends a message. No one else is ever going to do that again.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, because that would have been... I mean, then again, with Netflix, they can make, you know, 1,000 other shows and pick them up. That was the whole South Park joke about they buy everything Netflix back in the day. Now they're a little more stringent. But, yeah, that's a shame, because if they went off on that tangent 6 years ago, we're talking pre-Switch, you know, Star Fox Wii U was coming out. You imagine if they did a successful Legend of Zelda live-action show. I mean, they're doing a huge Lord of the Rings show, so I'm picturing it'll be something that would be not the same amount of money, but well, Amazon's doing that, but it would be something like that. I'm like, oh, week one, we fight the ogres here, and we fight the freaking whatever with the moblins. They're goblins.
Yeah.
This week we go to this labyrinth. This season it'll be this game. So by now we could have had like maybe a season for not every, but multiple Zeldas potentially. Maybe you could have had like standalone series. Maybe.
Yeah.
Could have been a thing. Maybe one would be Link to the Past. One would have been Ocarina. You know, who knows? But maybe they could have branched off into the Legend of Zelda. Excuse me, Super Mario Brothers animated. I don't think there ever will be a live action Super Mario Brothers show. I can't see that happening.
Thank fucking God. I definitely
can't see
don't.
That ever attempted again. Legend of Zelda, you could pull it off. Again, it's like Lord of the Rings. I don't think you can do that with Super Mario Brothers at all. Or you could do it with Star Fox and be creepy with those creepy puppets they bring back to face.
Oh, yeah.
Funny. But no, we missed out on an alternate. The timeline shifted, like Back to the Future. No Nintendo stuff, but they're still making that Super Mario Brothers movie, supposedly. Allegedly. And then this timeline where by now we have Pikmin cartoons and.
Yeah, isn't that Super Mario Brothers movie supposed to be like 2022 or something like that? I don't know if it's been affected by.
I don't know if that'd be affected by COVID.
Don't know if that's been affected by COVID.
Super Mario Brothers movie. I think that's going to be Universal, right? Because they're doing the theme park.
Mm-hmm.
I will see. So you would not have watched The Legend of Zelda?
I would have, but I just don't think it would have been good.
September 16th, 2022 is what they have listed on IMDb. So it's going forward. But I can picture Nintendo. They've relaxed a little bit, but I can picture them being that brutal to you.
Yeah.
I can. It's not smart, I think, long term. But especially in the bad Wii U days, that was probably not the best bet. But they stick to their guns. Nintendo. Don't reveal our Hanafuda designs. Back in 1895, they probably said it to somebody. They fucking took a baseball bat and ruined their shop. They have a Hanafuda card shops back then in Japan? I don't know.
Just smashing and crashing.
I read something a few weeks ago about, it was nuts, about the percentage, the number of businesses in Japan that could be traced back to like 700 years or something. There's like hundreds that go back.
That's wild.
You always forget how young our country is compared to everywhere else in the world. Like, that's nuts. That's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You can trace it back to like, you know, when there's freaking samurai. Well, they technically had samurais 150 years ago, but like, I'm talking about feudal Japan, like real, you know, no tech. I should have been a samurai, Ian.
You should have been. You'd have been a great one, I'm sure.
I like defense. Or I used to fence. All right, there's a GoFundMe going on, Ian, for FunSpot.
Yes, FunSpot is in need of financial help, and you can do that by going to their 2021 fundraiser on GoFundMe. They are seeking $50,000 in funds to basically be able to keep the
American Classic Arcade Museum, technically.
Yeah.
ACAM.
To keep it open.
I've never been there. I've heard it's magical.
Yeah, I've heard great things. Granddaddy John D is a big fan of that place.
Do you want me to adopt you, father?
No, I just like to call him Granddaddy John.
This is a multi-tiered, or is it multiple floors, right? Arcade. They have. I mean, like some stuff that's breathtakingly probably rare, and they have all the classics there. And I would love to hit there. What is it, New Hampshire? I'd love to hit it up one day.
John didn't want to be called Granddaddy John D. He shouldn't have called me drunk at 2 a.m. and referred to himself as Granddaddy John D.
Is that where the legend began?
That's where it began.
That's where the legend
began. Him leaving me a voicemail being like, well, this is Granddaddy John D. What's it going to take to get you on RetroWare TV? And I was like, I'm not doing it, John.
What did you want? What did you want you to do on RetroWare? What was this, like 2013? 14?
He called me drunk from MAGFest 2013. I think what it was.
Okay.
And that's what ended up getting me out to MAGFest in 2014. That and the fact that we started the podcast.
Did we? Wow.
2013.
7.5 years.
Summer of 2013. So.
Oh my God. So anyway, yeah, check it out. Help them reach their goal there. I got to get there one day. I got to get there. I got to get there. I got to get to the.
We got to keep places like this open because if they close during the pandemic, it's going to be that much harder for them to another place like this to reopen.
Absolutely.
I would hate to see, because if the place like this closes down and there's no storage, these go into the hands of collectors, and we're never going to be able to see collections like this in
not one,
one
spot, place.
Not in one spot again. It's important to keep them here while we have them.
And it's great to have Barcades keep basically responsible for the arcade resurgence of the past, you want to say, 8-10 years. They are. But I'd like to have places like this in Galloping Ghost, like these just big arcades. Like there should be more than two of them, you know, or three. I'd love to see them sprout out. Like, why isn't there one I can go to, like in Southern California? Like, that'd be great. Like a gigantic complex of them. That'd be fantastic. You know, there's like a handful of those, probably, these things. You have the arcade, the Pinball Hall of Fame in Vegas, which is for the basically this, but for pinball machines. There's not a lot of these things that exist, as far as I know. So anyway, what are we talking about? They're talking about, oh, did our predictions a little bit late on Google Stadia?
A little late.
Not a dollar short, but we're on track for it shutting down.
Yeah, so Google Stadia shuts down their internal game development studios. This is not them shutting down Stadia, but I think it's an extremely bad indicator as to how well this is going for them.
It's the opposite of good.
Yeah, it's the opposite of good.
This indication.
This is them basically shutting down, as Pat and I discussed last night, there are servers, which are probably less expensive to maintain, and then there are the aspects of this experiment that are taking constant money, that are constant drain on finances, and development studios specifically for Stadia are
for
definitely
new exclusive type of games
definitely is going to be a drain, and they got rid of it. So basically what this is like, what this looks like to me is this is Sony abandoning the Vita not even a year into it in the United States and being like, we're not making games for it anymore. Third parties can still put stuff out on it, you're still going to see support, but I think this is the beginning of what will probably be a much more rapid end to Stadia than even the Vita.
Well, there's no reason to go out and try to market anymore if you have no exclusive titles, to be like, they try to call it like a hybrid platform. It's not a platform anymore. It's just a streaming service.
Right.
It's not a platform if there's no games for it.
Yeah. Going to be anything exclusive, and there are currently still a few games on there that you can't play anywhere else, but they are all timed exclusives. I believe that Pac-Man game is a timed exclusive. I know my friend's game, Gunsport, is a timed exclusive, and I really can't wait to be able to play that.
Like Gunsport forever.
I fucking love Gunsport. It's so good. I was able to beta test it. Now I want to play it on an actual platform that's not Stadia. This is not good. That's basically all I have to say about that.
So what did we say? You said like June of last year. I said like August or September.
I think I said, yeah, like I knew I was being very
hyperbolic,
but yeah, I said June of last year and you said October. So maybe we might hit June or October of this year.
Either way, I'll be the winner of that bet because I'll still be closer. But,
yeah.
But if we don't do Price is Right rules, we both went over.
Yes, we did.
I should have used that one last week for a specific time, and I didn't. Like I was saying to Ian over a glass of Chardonnay.
Chardonnay.
In the jacuzzi. That's how we discuss the podcast topics. You know that.
Yeah, of course.
Oh,
I love hot tubs.
They did all the R&D for the streaming part.
Right.
So that's that money's spent.
It's money spent.
The marketing, well, as shitty as they market, that's spent. Now they're just draining money by having to employ people to make games that will come out and no one will buy, basically. As bad as it sounds, that's what's happening. So you feel bad for these people that now have to look for work elsewhere. But at least they were employed the past months, and hopefully they can still make these games. Hopefully in the agreement they can still make these games and have them come out on their platforms, you hope.
Yep.
You hope that there's like a clause where, well, if I was working for them, I'd be like, okay, if this goes belly up, can I take this IP elsewhere that we're developing?
Yeah, am I allowed to work with these ideas? Because otherwise it's just months of, I have nothing to show
for. But if it's technically their studio, I guess Google would probably say, no, we own it, but hopefully they work out a deal. I don't know. Come on, Google, have a heart. Have a heart, Google. Come on. Do something here.
Yeah, Googs.
Come on, Gooks. Is Gooks calling at 2 a.m. drunk? Hey, you're only going to search with me. No more of that Bing bullshit. Just me.
Granddaddy Gooks.
No, I don't want you going to Jeeves. F Jeeves. That's me doing Googs' voice Googs. When he's drunk.
Googs.
Googs drinks a lot of whiskey. So what is it? It's still $10 a month for Stadia Pro. There, I said to myself I wanted to give it a trial just to see if I could try out a modern game on my system and see what would run up. If I played Cyberpunk and it's better than a PS4, it's like, why not try it out, even though you don't really own it once I shut the servers down, you know?
Right.
But I want to at least demo it and see. Because like I said, I have fiber optics, so I mean, if it doesn't work with me, even with Wi-Fi though, but if it doesn't work with me, everyone else is going to have issues with it. So anyway, anything else to add there with this? I feel bad if you bought the Founders Edition bundle for $129.
Especially because they're giving away like the fucking... they were giving away the controllers and the Chromecasts for at least a month through YouTube. I think it was last month.
What does a Chromecast cost?
I don't know.
Like $20? What does a Chromecast even cost?
They might still be doing that. I almost did, just so I could play fucking Gunsport. But I didn't.
Are you going to wait for it to come out somewhere else?
Yeah.
Hey, your friend got paid though, right? He got paid that exclusive Google bucks.
He did, and it got the game out of. I don't know the full story. I mean, he's published, you know, a number of games, but that one was constantly back and forth in limbo, and it was Stadia is the reason why he was able to finish the game. You know what? So there's good news there.
We should do the CU Podcast streaming service and game studios. I'm announcing it right now.
Completely unnecessary game studios.
We'll do Gunsport too. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Too.
We'll stream it on the podcast. We'll do it on Twitch. Well, that's how you can play it. You watch us play it, and you pretend you're playing it, and you come along.
I'll let Brandon know that we've announced a sequel.
We announced a sequel. We're pre-announcing it. They do that with movies. Right before the movie comes out for the weekend, or right during the weekend, we're doing the sequel. They do that all the time. We're doing the sequel. It happens. All right, is that it for this intro?
That's it for this intro.
Oh, this was a fun one.
That was good.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Right, Ian.
Yep.
The Nintendo Switch.
Mm.
The hybrid console, the real hybrid console, not Google Stadia, reached a milestone following the past Christmas holiday season that was startling yet not surprising. Surprising but not shocking. They reached nearly 80 million sold. It's
crazy.
That's nuts.
It's, 30 million shy of, I think, what the Wii did, because I think the Wii was like 111 million. I think the PS2, what was the PS... It'd be nice to look at the numbers.
I'll bring them up. I know you're going in that direction, because I would have had it prepared. But so the PlayStation 2 did 155. That's still the big boy.
Okay.
Wii did 101.6.
101.
So we'll say it's 30 million away from the Wii.
Gotcha.
I never thought the Switch would have had a chance to catch the Wii. Now it has a chance to catch the Wii. I never would have thought that. It had a chance. I said it was going to sell. I thought it was going to be successful. My range was like 35 to 45. I said, that's going to be a banger success. This is blowing away. And this is in 3.5 years.
So
almost 4 years
in
a couple months.
If they announce a Switch Pro and keep it as part of the same line, and they don't do it as like a, you know, a sequel system.
Not the Switch Pocket?
Which I don't think they would. I think we will easily hit the... I think we will hit the 100 million.
You'll break it.
Yeah. As long as however they release the Switch Pro, whenever that eventually comes out, as long as they're allowed to count that towards total Switch sales.
The same platform.
The same platform, they will absolutely hit 100.
I think it might without it. I think if you get two more years out of this, I think you might inch up.
Yeah.
I mean, this is nuts, what's been going on. So... like I said, like, this isn't like, oh, we told you so, because I mean, I knew it was going to be a success, but not like this. But it really shows you not to count Nintendo out, but don't underestimate how much a consumer base wants something that, that doesn't exist, but they once they see it, I want it. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know they want it till they see it, if that makes sense.
Sure. And that really is the trick of marketing, is to come up with something that people go, I want that when they see it exists, but have it actually fill
a big need.
Fill a market space.
Because that was, because back, remember that first, that hipster party commercial where no one was under, no one was over the age of 24 when they did that, was that fall of 2016? Remember that?
And they were sitting on the rooftop.
Yes, they're playing the games, which is fine if you want to do that. But there was a division between people like Ian and me were like, oh, okay, I see the appeal of this.
Right.
I immediately see. Versus the other people were like, where's the, this is, oh, this is casual stuff still. This was, they should have a hardcore gaming system. Not realizing that's not what Nintendo's brand and marketing is. And guess who's correct? Everyone that was on this side of the table. Because, you know.
I was telling Pat this earlier. I always want to name some specific names. When we were doing the biz jazz. the biz coos. I need people to understand. Obviously, this is a joke. I hate hot tubs. I can't fucking stand them.
Oh.
I like, if I'm in a hot tub for 5 minutes, I feel like I've taken stronger drugs than... I hate it. I get woozy. I get fucking dumb. Anyway.
Gotta keep hydrating, and that's the key. Sorry, go on.
So, I always want to call out certain people that really hitched their cart to the Switch being a failure, because it was...
Doomed! Doomed was the words they used.
Because it wasn't just them being like, I don't get this, I'm not sure this is going to succeed. They were all so smarmy and certain.
Because I like the PS4 and the PS3. This is how I game. That's how I think the fucking universe wants their games. And that's why you're wrong.
It's totally okay.
They didn't
to
get that, like, there's different segments of the population that may not want just a hardcore gaming console. They want the Disney console. They need that. There's always been that in the market going back to the 80s.
It's totally cool to have the market concerns, but yeah, I really could have done,
like,
without.
And vision?
And I hate to say it, it's not sound petty, but I will never forget the people who just got so fucking high and mighty over this thing being a failure.
Yeah. It's like, it wasn't a shock that the Wii U did bad. From the start, people were confused about
The Wii U looked like a mess going into it.
The marketing was horrible. Calling it the Wii U was horrible. We called that out. Like, I mean, I called that out before the podcast. It was a podcast still, but like, Wii U came out, 2012? Jesus, it was only 9 years ago. God. But it's like confusion in the marketplace. The tablet thing had issues, and then there was no third-party support. People lied. Companies lied about the third-party support, which is, that's more on them. But they were even like, they were shaky on it from the start.
I didn't even tell this. I can't believe I didn't tell this fucking story. This just happened this past weekend. Not a tale. It's not a juicy tales from the game store. No, literally, I had a family come in and they were asking me questions about Wii's, GameCubes, and Wii U's. Mm-hmm. I tried to give them all the information that I could. They bought the Wii U, took it home, brought it back, and exchanged it for a Wii because they thought the Wii U was just a super Wii and that it was still going to be able to play GameCube games, which was a big thing for them. And, like, they asked me questions and I told them, but people...
They couldn't put it together in their mind. Like, people, what? It's the same color, it's the same form looking, and it has the same name on it.
And I like a lot of things about the Wii U.
Well,
down on that system as a lot of people. I don't think there's any real need to go back to it now. But while it was out, I enjoyed it. But the Wii U, at least the Virtual Boy, you look at it and you're like, okay, I know what this is, even if I absolutely don't want it and no one wants this. People didn't know what the fuck the Wii U was.
The fact that they used, well, there was, no one ended up buying the white one, but there was a white console. And that's how they announced it at E3.
Oh, that was even worse, yeah.
Because... I was there in the conference room, like when they still were doing them, with, like, you know, Reggie's
doing the fucking catch a ball, fucking,
and people in the audience, we're talking game journalists, were like, so is this an add-on? Is this a new, like, we didn't know. I had a feeling, though. I said this probably can't be an add-on. There's too much new shit going on. But the fact that we had to question it at the time,
yeah,
horrible that Nintendo didn't do the marketing, and horrible that they named it the same fucking console. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
The Wii was a shitty name to begin with. The Wii U was an absolute abomination of a name. What does that fucking mean?
Well, the Wii means we're together playing Wii. That's what it means.
Yes, but
Wii U. Yeah, that doesn't mean that means less.
Yeah.
But yeah. The fact that it was the same color and how they marketed it,
anyway,
same form.
We get on this every time it comes up, but I felt like I had to bring it up because literally as recent...
It's a smarminess.
As recent... Oh, well, that, but as literally as this past weekend, people are still confused over what a Wii U is.
Yes. And it's not just the fact that... hey, one of the people sat where Ian was. I interviewed this individual that predicted, you know, the Switch would be a failure. They never admit they're wrong. Just say, I had a bad prediction on a video game console. It's on me. It's like, this is why I hate sports analysts.
I fucking hate sports analysts, too.
Not all of them. A lot. You have to fucking pull them by their teeth to get them to admit that when they are wrong on a prediction. Just like, you can't, like, it doesn't kill your reputation to admit, hey, I was wrong. I called that one wrong. Like, you're not a weaker person for doing that. And they can't even do that. They can't do it. So that's bad. But this is a miraculous.
We do all love Stephen Smith, though, don't we?
I think Stephen A. Smith is an interesting case. We want to go on this because he knows a decent amount, and he's also extremely entertaining. So,
yes.
He's like the sweet spot of it.
I don't watch a lot of sports stuff, but if I'm flipping channels and Stephen A. Smith is talking, I will usually stop and listen to what he has to say.
He's evolved into carnival barking sports guy, but he's not. He's super entertaining, even like he talks about MMA. He knows nothing about MMA at all. It's embarrassing. He tries to pretend because he's probably paid like $6 million a year, Stephen A. Smith, $5 million. Like,
it's all right. Sometimes I pretend I can talk about stocks.
But like he knows about basketball and football.
No, he's very good about basketball.
Because he used to play and cover that. Like he used to be a beat writer, so he's not a nobody.
Right.
You know, a lot of these newer, younger guys that come along and gals are maybe smart about the sports, but he's actually used to be a beat writer. He used to travel with teams and cover them. I believe it was the 76ers, I believe. But, like, now we're going on a tangent. But, no, I like Stephen A. Smith. That's
he's, like, listening to Shannon Sharp, too.
Shannon Sharp, he's all right. He's all right. What were we talking about? Switch. Oh, Animal Crossing, Ian, had a milestone as well. Not a milestone, but, like, a huge number that we talked about in the biz-coos? What?
The biz-coos.
Biz-coos.
The biz-coos. This is another one. Just the attach rate. Animal Crossing New Horizons has sold... 31 million copies.
In less than a year. 9 months.
Less than a year.
In a pregnancy.
To put that into perspective, Super Mario, or Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on the Wii, or not on the Wii, the Switch. Has sold 33.
And that's in like... And that
4 years.
And that came out almost, was like May of 2017?
Yeah, Almost 4 years.
That's nuts.
And Animal Crossing will continue. I have a feeling the strategy for Animal Crossing is we're approaching a full year of Animal Crossing. I have a feeling that they're going to announce new events and new things that they will roll out for the next year, which will get more people to buy into it. It will get people, lapsed players like me, to maybe sit back down and go back and clean up their villages. I think that we'll see probably... If I had to guess, I think we'll probably see a final total sold count of 40 mil on this. It's going to slow down.
But that's insane.
But it's nuts, especially. And, you know, usually when we talk about attach rates like this, games that have sold in this amount, it's usually like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe in that it's been out for multiple years. Sure. This was just a perfect fucking storm.
Yeah, because it's not like Animal Crossing was a household name at all. Here's the list of all the other combined sales and what they did. You ready?
Yeah.
For this, I'll go in order that they came out here. 2005, Animal Crossing, let's see, Wild World did... Excuse me, 2001, the original Animal Crossing, did 2.27 million. Not bad. It's pretty good.
Especially on the GameCube.
Yeah. Especially on the GameCube, which no one had. I mean, God, it sold 24 million on the GameCube. It was successful.
I thought it was 30, but okay, yes. It was small.
Without looking. Okay. Next, you had 2005... You had Wild World on the DS. You have a bump up to 11.75 million. DS, a lot more people have it.
Probably my favorite version of the game, too.
The Wii, for some reason, no one bought it compared to the attach rate. Look at the comparison. 101 million Wii sold. They only sold 4.32 million. Still good, but City Folk did not sell well at all. So it shows you something's going on there.
Weird, too, because I totally... That could have been the perfect storm if people... had known about it more, I think, at the time, because that would have been a great system for it.
3DS 2012, new benchmark. It beats out the DS one, which makes sense. 12.82 million for Animal Crossing New Leaf. Then we go to the tale of two consoles. This was the tale of Nintendo in 2015. You have Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer. That was a game. Happy Home Designer is cute. Sold 3.47 million. That's respectable.
It is. It's a spinoff. It's really not like the normal game, but we can count it.
But then you have Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival on the Wii U.
That is a shit game.
But either way, it only sold 490,000 for a first party game.
That's insane.
That is awful. That is for one that the previous ones did up to 12 million. That is awful.
I do have to point out that it is awful.
It's awful.
You have to. The game was initially only sold with two amiibos. It was basically you buy the amiibos and the game was a free pack.
Okay. That's still awful.
It is awful, but I would be interested in comparing that to sales of amiibos and see where it
I see what you're saying.
It falls in there. Because it really was more like you get a game but you want the amiibos.
But it still goes to show you just how weak the Wii U was.
Oh, yeah.
How they were just like, okay, 3DS is keeping us alive.
Right.
Which we talked about at the time. Oh, Nintendo's doing. No, the 3DS was keeping them alive for like 5 years. And then you have Wii U one, which you said basically was saying, well, you're really trying to sell toys at that point.
Yeah,
it also kept Nintendo alive. Was Amiibo and 3DS kept them alive?
When Nintendo stumbles, they always happen to accidentally come upon something else that's really big.
You like our Amiibos? We'll make all these different fucking versions of them, as many as we can. We'll pump them out.
Nintendo fans who don't even own Wii U's will buy these to put them on their shelves.
And then dumb collectors will think they're rare. Nintendo is like, oh, we'll just make a billion more of them, and because we're making the money on them. So anyway, so that's shocking, an attach rate like that. I'm most shocked about the Wii one only selling 4.32 million. That's really the story. 4% attach rate versus a Pat Math 37.5 attach rate so far and going up.
Yeah. Well, COVID definitely was a factor. New Leaf on the 3DS, I think, was when the game really got a big boost in popularity. So I think COVID was a factor, but New Leaf was, I think, the game that really laid some groundwork for a fan base to get excited for this next one.
But yeah, this will be the perennial, like, this will be their big hit on each console going forward. There'll be an Animal Crossing that'll do huge numbers probably because of this going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like congratulations. They welcome into like the Zelda club with Mario. They're waiting there. Hey, come over.
Now if they could just bring personality back to the fucking animals.
They don't personalities?
Not as much as previous iterations.
They've muted them down?
Yeah, they feel more like accessories to the village as part of like an actual. That's a different story. I'm not actually the biggest New Horizons fan. I love Animal Crossing.
You've been very contrarian in this podcast, on a couple of things. Except for Stephen A. Smith. I'm glad you like Stephen A. Smith.
I love Animal Crossing, and New Horizon provided me with some comfort during the pandemic, but it's not my favorite version of the game by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay, well, there you go. And then good old Reggie did it. He's doing a lot of... I wonder what he thinks of the GameStop stuff going on. Hopefully, he's selling a stock. He did an interview recently about after the failure of the Wii U. Reggie said Switch was a make-or-break product for Nintendo. This was in New York Gaming Awards Twitch stream. New York Gaming Awards. He opened up about the slow Wii U sales. This is from GoNintendo's article. And resounding success of the Switch. Reggie shares just how important that Switch breakthrough was for the Big N, which you can read below. He said, Nintendo has done so many innovations in the space. I think what Nintendo did with the Switch after the poor performance of Wii U, I think to me... of what I was part of, that's my lasting memory. So people forget when the Wii U launched, the performance over that life cycle was as poor. I mean, it was the worst selling platform. I think maybe Virtual Boy was a little bit worse. Oh yeah, Virtual Boy was worse. Nintendo would have been out of business if they sold less than a million Wii U's, maybe. Not out of business, but they would have been hurting. But Wii U underperformed pretty radically in the marketplace. So
he makes a good point about it being make or break, and I'm thinking about it. I'm like,
make or break in terms of the reputation, at least.
I think reputation.
Not for their money. They still have tons of money.
But see, that's what I was thinking about. The Switch really did become more... As we've always talked about, as other people have talked about, Nintendo's got failure money.
Yes.
They can fail. I mean, I don't remember how accurate it is, but I kept seeing the number going around for a few years ago. We were talking about it during the Wii U. If Nintendo fucking released failures just financially, they had money to float them for like fucking 35 years.
They have amount of money was obscene that they made from the Wii, and then plus that they already had in the bank.
You know, so that's what they were talking. So they could have failed and kept going, but the Wii U to Switch transition was crucial for two reasons. One, for reputation, but two, Nintendo always, when something like the Wii U failed, they could fall back on something like the 3DS.
Sure.
The Switch is now encompassing your console market and your portable market. If the Switch fails, you don't have a portable market to fall back on.
But that's how we always said it's going to be a success because at the very least, it's a portable. That's why I hedged my bets. That's why I said, well,
people will buy it because it's a new Nintendo portable.
It's a new portable. And the 3DS is so strong.
Even if the console aspect of it were to fail or not be used, Nintendo would still probably do very well selling a new portable.
Yes.
But yeah.
That was the logic behind it. That was the calculus.
That is where I think, you know, it did become a... Like, I think make or break is a bit of an exaggeration, but it was definitely a very important transition time for them.
Doing some huge pat math on my calculator, 100 million consoles. I'm talking about console sales on the Wii. Say they made $100 on each. It's probably around that, maybe a little bit less, not counting accessories. I don't know what number that is anymore. $10 billion? $10 billion! That's not counting software sales. And they did tens of millions of software sales. They did, 40 million just for the Mario Kart on the Wii. So, I mean, like, are you kidding me? Don't worry about the Wii U putting them out of business. They're not counting 3DS successes to offset the Wii U's failures. So, but yeah, you don't want to ever become Atari and be like, oh, you have crap consoles. You don't want to be Sega. What the fuck is this? This is your third failure in a row. You don't want to ruin your rep that way.
Yeah, they could financially fail, but they could not... they could afford to financially fail. They could not afford to fail in the eyes of the consumer.
I mean, you can make the argument that Nintendo's too big to fail at this point, where they're like, well, they have so much money and so much going on, they could just throw so much shit at you that something's going to stick.
Well,
that could be true, too.
And I think that's also part of why they do all these... And this is what I don't like, but Nintendo does a lot of weird, crazy things that seem ass backwards, and they do it because they can, and they don't need to do much of anything.
Sure, absolutely. So it is what it is. Plus, like I said, who would have filled the hole of Nintendo? I mean, Nintendo has their IPs alone are worth so much money. Without a console, it's nuts how much the Legend of Zelda IP would be worth, or Super Mario Brothers. So, but I get what he's saying about consoles, though. So, but there's also, remember, Ian, there's also that one member of the segment of the gaming segment that will always buy, you know, go for a Switch.
If you're into games with blood and violence and sexual content and kids in sexual compromising positions and rape on the Nintendo, if that's what you want, then buy a Switch.
Yeah, so they got that covered. Those gamers will be right running towards the Switch right there.
Jesus Christ.
Fucking idiot. All right, Ian,
special boy, we've got big news out of the Video Game History Foundation and
our pals
over there, and Ars Technica has a good write-up on it as well. So everyone, if you ever wondered why didn't they make a baseball game that was like NBA Jam, you had Open Ice,
Hockey. Had
NBA Jam, you had NFL Blitz.
Mm-hmm. Football.
And you ended up with, it wasn't Midway, but also you ended up seeing like arcade soccer games, like Sega's Virtual Striker.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That could be played, you know, quicker.
Even Virtua Tennis, you want to make the argument. Yeah.
Sure. So, you know, all of these sports, all of the major sports got an arcade type game. Baseball never really did. Now you can say, I think it's worth bringing him up.
We'll say NBA Jam style arcade.
Yeah, I think Baseball Stars is close. Baseball Stars 2 specifically, not Baseball Stars 1. Baseball Stars Championship Edition on the
Neo Geo
on the MVS is more of just a standard baseball game.
However, there's risks that can be taken because those are not standalone machines. So that's an important thing because those are game carts. You basically are putting slotting in carts. Yes. So it's not as big as a risk as
I'm just saying
like
there was some precedent.
Sure.
It has been done before. I think Baseball Stars 2 is probably one that does it the best, keeps it moving along, feels very arcadey. But there was going to be one. Midway was working with Intelligent Technologies on a game called Midway Power Up Baseball that was essentially to be the NBA Jam baseball. So apparently this was known. Kyle Orland of Ars Technica did a reverse search on the Internet Archive and did find that there were people talking about it at one point in time back in the day. But it was quickly forgotten about and nothing ever came of it. A ROM was found among the collection of late video game developer Chris Oberth. Most of the stuff that he had related to his own project, but as this article states, they found a CD-ROM with the word baseball handwritten in marker on it, popped it in a drive, and found source code, art assets, and uncompiled ROMs. So,
Power Up Baseball.
Power Up Baseball. Gotta stop saying, Power Up Baseball is interesting in that it uses two trackballs. This makes sense because it was developed by as much as this was going to be a Midway published game, it sounds like a lot of the development work was being done by Intelligent Technologies, which was always famous for Golden Tee Golf. That was their big thing. And you use a trackball to pitch, and you use a trackball to bat, and then there are base running buttons. From what I understand. And it actually sounds like it probably would have been pretty fun to, you know, pitch and bat with the trackballs. I think just the pitching and batting aspect of it sounds like it would have been a lot of fun.
The faster you get, you roll the trackball to pitch, it'll go faster.
Right. And much like
For swinging, I guess the power of the swing based upon how quick you slam it.
Yeah. And I believe I was, when I talked to, Frank Cifaldi about it a few months ago, he had mentioned, I think, that much like with...
Oh, you had the inside skinny.
With Golden Tee, you can, you know, pull back and then go forward to, like, slice or hook. There's probably
the curve.
There's probably two combinations for your pitches. So you can get your curveballs, your changeups, your fastballs. And then you could fill up power meters to do special... pitches like tornadoes, and then there's
like ultra stuff from Baseball Simulator.
Yeah, you can do like flaming baseballs.
You can grab the pitch and toss it and hit it. So
yeah.
Like
there's a lightsaber swing that you can do.
Yeah, which is all on their page here. So they're making it baseball, and that's a hard sport to make more fun. They're making it a little more fun and NBA Jam ish with these wacky things. You know.
But a couple problems came up with it, and I think
they put these on location, correct? They put these out to test.
That I don't know.
I believe they said they put out a small number.
Okay.
Yeah. Because one of these was found. It looks like it was found. They found a cabinet a year ago without the board. They found a cabinet.
Yeah. Well, they do talk about how there was like test cabinets set up at Midway, or I think Intelligent Technologies, because you could hear people down the hall playing it because the trackballs were constantly slamming.
There were public play tests. It was on the page.
So why didn't it come out? Well, one reason is technology-wise, the game does not look very good. You can look at video of it, and I guess, you know, in the year from when they had started developing it to when it was getting close to completion, expectations for graphics and what could be done with arcade graphics had changed fairly considerably.
Yeah, it still has the digitized, like, NBA Jam sort of look, but the fact that basically on a 2D space, the baseball game, from what it was being explained, it's not real 3D.
It's not 3D. It looks very strange.
So the scaling is weird, and from how it was described, it was like, well... The guys for the technology, what it sounds like when you're running around the bases and the ball comes back, it's like they had a guess where the guys were running around when it came back into view and things like that. That's what I was gathering from it. So it seemed like it was just a little bit. It didn't just work. The concept with the technology combined didn't work. This was what Alan Noon said, the art director. He said, we put it out on test in a handful of locations. It didn't do well, and then after a couple of weeks, it was yanked. And we reworked it, and we worked really hard in trying to fix it and make it better and put it out again, and it didn't earn.
So yeah, what they said was it didn't earn, but they also said when they were playing it, they realized design-wise it was kind of a quarter muncher.
Baseball games are rough.
Because, yeah, it's tough to do baseball in the arcade because unlike football, unlike basketball, hockey, where everything has a time limit you can play into, and then with an arcade game, you can speed up the action and you can shorten those quarters and those periods. You can make a basketball game feel perfectly at home in an arcade setting. NBA Jam did it. It's one of the best video games ever created.
Yeah, when you play an NBA Jam game, you're going to play about the same amount of times and quarters each. It's predictable.
Right. If you are playing someone else in Midway Power-Up Baseball who's very good, I mean, you go to extra innings, that's costing you more money. So it became a money sink and a time sink. They couldn't figure out a way to really get people in and off of it and feel satisfied.
This is the problem.
They tried shortening innings. It didn't really, or shortening the amount of innings. That didn't help. They just couldn't really get it.
It's a problem inherent with the sport. I hate to say, some people love baseball. I played it. It's not like the other sports because the experiences can be totally different. You can have a game where I went to a Padres game where it was like 20 to 18. I'll never forget that. Me and Frank left because this is ridiculous. This game's going for 4.5 hours. We got to get out of here. There's games that can go 1-0 where nothing happens. No one gets a hit or barely gets a hit. When you're playing a video game, especially in the arcade, you want to feel like you did something. And with baseball, as in real life, and with the game, you can do nothing and come away with absolute nothing. You play NBA Jam or NFL Hits, you can do a fun play, you can score easily and do some things. Baseball, I can be struck out 3 times, made my quarter last 3 innings or whatever, and I do jack shit and I walk away. And that's why historically you have not seen a lot of baseball arcade games.
Right.
But I can only talk. Ian named one. There was a relief pitcher, which had a fun way of reshuffling it because they put you in situations to save the game. You play like 2 innings or 1 inning, and you continue on. It was
a relief pitcher is actually a really neat way to do it.
Yes, it's one of the only ways you can do it because it puts you You got 3 guys are on base. You got to strike out 2 guys in order to end the game.
A lot of modern baseball games will do that now too, where you can just play like certain at bats or tense moments. Like if you create a team and you're like trying to sim a season, there are things, and that to me is honestly my most fun way to play a baseball video game. Throw me in when the counts are full and the bases are loaded and let me make that pitch. Like, that's fun.
But then there's that other one from the 80s that had the black sticks in order to hit, literally like a little bat on the left, on the right had a stick for pitching.
You mentioned this in the Biz Coups, and called? That I don't recall.
You don't recall because they probably didn't sell well. They had one at Casino Pier in Seaside Heights. Was it World Series Baseball? And you put a quarter in and you played like 3 innings. So you're paying 75 cents to play 9 innings. That's how they had to do it. Because you can't do a quarter for 9 innings because a baseball game in the arcade will take you 20 minutes. Play 15, 20 minutes. They want to keep your money. But the problem with that game is that you're spending quarters just to get used to the mechanics of it. Because a baseball game is also the most complicated to figure out how the hell do I play this. You got to worry about the pitching mechanics. You got to worry about the batting mechanics. You got to know how do I throw to certain bases? How do I stop my runner from advancing if there's a fucking pop fly? How do I go back? Baseball rules, if you don't know baseball, are extremely hard to understand if you don't grow up with the sport.
Batting, pitching, fielding,
running,
base running, they are
stealing bases,
they are
pickoffs.
That's 4 different systems that you have to learn
basically
to play a game
at the same time.
Whereas when you're playing something like football or a basketball game, you're learning kind of 2 at max. You're learning offense and defense.
You need 2 buttons and a controller.
Yeah,
on most sports games in the arcade, whether it's pass and shoot in hockey,
3
in soccer,
NBA
and in football.
Yeah,
in baseball, you got to know 18 different things and the weird rules on top of it. It just does not make for a good arcade experience. It just doesn't.
No, I need to make sure I'm saying this. I'm not trashing baseball games in general.
No.
Baseball video games in general are some of my most favorite sports games, but just not in an arcade setting. I think the best baseball experience you can have in an arcade is on one of those Williams pitch and bat machines. You get the pitching, you get the batting, and it moves it along by having all of your base running done by where the ball goes. So you're naturally going to move through your outs and all of that stuff very quickly.
So there was, let's see, in 83, Sega put out Champion Baseball. I do not remember that. I'm assuming that came out in the U.S. Then obviously you had the Nintendo VS baseball game, if you want to count that as well. Then you had, yes, it was World Series. That was the game. That's the game I played. It had a little black, it's a weird construction, a little black module on the left and a little stick, which not only did the strength of your bat, but also the position. It was kind of high tech for, like, we're talking about probably 85, 86, 85.
Who made it?
Cinematronics.
Oh, interesting.
I'm surprised you never saw it before. And on the right side, you had a similar little stick, but it was inside. It wasn't raised to do the pitch, and you pulled it back. So if you're playing by yourself, Ian, you had to go from left to right on the machine in between innings. So it's interesting. So if you're playing two players, you'd have to swap positions. Surprised you never figured it. I don't think it's probably a rare game, but like you can see why. Yeah, I'm looking at it, what they did for coins here, how much it was coins. But it was not one quarter for nine innings, because then you're not making any money if you're running it.
No.
But yes, no one was ever playing that game at Casino Pier that I remember. It was very rare you see someone playing that. That's, to me, the classic arcade baseball game. Yeah, great graphics, but the mechanics were rough. Who's trying to call me? Go away. So anyway, So check this out. This will be released at some point. I believe the ROM will be released at some point.
I don't know if they'll release it standalone, but it says in that article, if you go to the video game history page, and you should, because it's got animated GIFs of all the special moves.
And there's
and
a
stuff
YouTube
like
video.
That. There's a YouTube video where you can watch people play it. But apparently, I didn't see them, but there are instructions there on how to compile your own version of it to get it running.
Okay.
To play it.
This will be running on, says that while the game is not yet supported in a released version of the MAME software, you can build your own right now from the project repository. Oh, I'm sure. The standard instructions for compiling MAME are here, I'm sure, within a week. There'll be a freaking, you know, MAME version.
Give it time.
But it's interesting because I never heard of this before. I didn't know this was a thing at all. And I guess this didn't come up any murmurings at all, Ian. I never heard of this.
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah. If you look at the article, the Ars Technica article, it says that Kyle Orland did a reverse archive search and did find people talking about it.
Is it real?
It was minimal and it disappeared quickly. But it was in some way, shape, or form known about back when it would have been relevant.
So yeah, and then the interesting about the one machine that there's a picture of that someone found, it does not have a trackball on it. It looks like it has four buttons on both. It doesn't look like a trackball. So either they swapped it out, it's still the same control panel, but there's two joysticks instead of trackballs on that. But I'm sure they could probably go back in time and redo it. It's interesting. If you see the pictures in the bottom of the cabinet?
No, I didn't.
It's on the bottom of the page. But,
oh, okay.
But this is great. Finding something like this is fantastic. I mean, this is like in the Hall of Fame of, like, you know, test release games that you don't find, like Primal Rage 2, where it's like there's like a few of them.
Yeah.
You know, was it like the Beavis and Butthead one, I think we talked about, that they made a couple of them. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's cool. I mean, even if it's not good, it's neat to know that they tried. Because I did love those Midway Sports games. Even right. Open Ice.
Open Ice is fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. All right, Ian.
Yep.
We have an update. Update. This was a Kickstarter that we covered. It was a BCC. That's how long ago it was. Before Castle Contrary. Because I checked the footage. We covered this in...
I thought you were going to say before Contrary Code, which it probably was as well.
It was before Contrary Code as well. But this was like mid-2017. I believe. We discussed the All Controller Kickstarter. It was to be the universal controller that you never need to buy another controller ever again. Universal and fully customizable. Before I get into this topic, I just want to say this is not a call to attack anyone or go after anyone personally that was involved with the Kickstarter. But this is to me going to be more of a
cautionary tale.
Cautionary tale, educational tale about Kickstarters and hardware. Because at the time that this was presented to us, you know, I was shown it in person by a YouTuber. That's not all I was just talking about. We were talking about the Kickstarter no matter what. But, you know, a fully working prototype, show me what it can do. Remember, this is a controller that is basically like any gamepad that you see comes out nowadays where it has twin sticks. You have a D-pad, you have trigger buttons, you have, you know, front face buttons, but it also has a little LCD menu where you can load up different game settings. You can save game settings for different things. So they were really trying to say this is going to be the one controller you ever need. And it was supposed to also support, I believe, Wii U and then Switch. They're going to add support for consoles besides computer what have you. Yeah, there's even a little Switch icon here. Play any game in the universe. That's what they were calling it. So you'd be able to use it on the Xbox, whatever, your PS4.
Fully remappable controls.
Yes.
Which, I mean, is honestly, I mean, in reality, it's a fine idea. You know, someone like Vani would have benefited greatly from something like this because she hates how the confirm and cancel buttons on like a Nintendo system are different than the confirm and cancel buttons on a PlayStation.
So she can switch it around.
She would have been able to modify it so everything felt normal. Like it's a nice idea.
So this was supposed to be fulfilled May 2018. They did a Kickstarter. Then afterwards, they did an Indiegogo, I believe, not just to take more orders, to basically use as a shop, because you can do that with Indiegogo, and you transfer over the amount from your Kickstarter there. But also because one of the people involved with the Kickstarter told me, well, there was someone trying to impersonate it, so we took it over, and then, you know, they used it as a shop. So they received all in all on this Kickstarter over $232,000 Canadian dollars. Which Pat Math is at this point probably like 210. I have no idea. 80%. I'll look it up. Well, over 200,000. We'll just say $200,000. And then it was over. Let's see, 1,732 backers. Oh, 230,000 total if you include the Indiegogo. I believe 2,100 backers. 2,162. So 230 U.S. total. It was 185,000 on Kickstarter. Then they added, it looks like, another, what is that, 55,000, 45,000 or so. On there. So the problem is that this was not fulfilled to anyone from what I saw, or very few people, even as of last year. So it was going close to 2 years over with very little updates on this at all. And people were wondering what was going on. Some people that are involved with the project dropped off, and there was issues. So not saying no one got this. It seems like some people may have gotten this. I was shown an unlisted video of someone receiving theirs. But if you search on YouTube, all you see besides our coverage of it is promotions for the Kickstarter and the prototype. So from my look at this, not a huge amount of people have received this product. And unfortunately, that's where this has been standing, because when you look at the updates on this, the last update on Kickstarter was October 21st, talking about the website having difficulties, not even talking about, well, what's going on. And then you look at the comments and people are like saying to that, still don't have my controller, refund please. Saying stuff like, own your own mistakes, tell everyone it's a dead project. These are people simply sad, giving back my money. The all controller has become dead tech at this point. So people are not happy about the response. On Indiegogo, the last update on Indiegogo was August of last year, saying we're still hard at work completing the orders for our Kickstarter backers. Since the Kickstarter backers order their controllers first, we will finish their orders and then start sending out controllers for Indiegogo backers. I would assume, since there hasn't been an update in 6 months, that no one from the Indiegogo has gotten theirs yet. Because if I was doing a Kickstarter properly, I would communicate your controllers are going out now.
Yeah, so, I would certainly have announced that.
So this is not good. This is not good at all. And the comments on Indiegogo... they basically repeated what I just said. There aren't any YouTube review videos for this controller besides a Kickstarter preview from 3 years ago. I did not plagiarize my thoughts from that. That's totally, we had the same thoughts. There should be a couple dozen YouTubers reviewing this thing by now. I think I'm done with Indiegogo. If you are too, like this comment. An update now and again to get the dogs off their tail, I would imagine. This keeps me up at night. Now, not that I can't afford to lose $100, it's just that I hate being scammed. And it sure seems like we all got scammed. They stole our money. No news. This is clearly a scam. I don't want to sound pushy or something, but a few words from you would be nice. It's been almost 4 months since the last update. You can be pushy if you're 2.5 years behind getting your product. You can be pushy.
Yeah.
You're allowed to be pushy. I'll say that if I'm 2.5 years or behind something I've taken money for, you can be pushy with Pat. You can push me at that point, because that's not, especially with no communication.
I'm pretty lenient with like crowdfunding stuff. You could be a year behind and I'm probably going to be okay. But once we start breaking that year behind point, I better be seeing constant updates on what's going on.
Yeah, if you update, okay, we're working towards it. If you're leaving people in the dark, yeah, push. Like my favorite Twilight Zone episode. Remember push?
Mm-hmm.
Will it be next up? Sorry. I feel like the lack of updates, the more people get discouraged with this project getting complete, so they demand their money back, which then forces them to slow production down to then deal with people suing them. No one's going to sue them, Richard. That's a weird comment. it's just that people want... I don't know if you have grounds to sue over Indiegogo or Kickstarter. I don't think you do.
No, I feel like I have to say this every fucking time we talk about it. Kickstarter and Indiegogo are not stores. You are volunteering to back a project that you think has merit, and you get a reward for it. Maybe
two Christmas gifts missed, only two to go, hoping to see it eventually. Someone I guess wants it as a Christmas gift and they're missing their third Christmas without it. Interesting. So I would say this. I would bet that based upon these comments and lack of updates, the vast majority of people have not gotten this.
No,
I will go out on a small limb and I will say that. And what's more startling is that when we covered this, well, first of all, when we covered this, you were most concerned about the build quality of a company starting off doing controllers like this. That's one thing I remember you said.
Yes, I was. And I mean, if this were to come out today, if we were covering this brand new today, that would still be my concern. Especially as time goes on and controllers get more and more complex, third-party controllers get shittier and shittier. And you can say that you're putting all the effort and tech into it that you can, and I want to believe you, but I have yet to find anything other than a first-party controller. Once controllers got more complex than PlayStation 2, let's put it that way, and original Xbox and GameCube, once you got more complex than that, once you got into 360, PS3, PS4, Xbox One, I have yet to find a third-party controller that isn't absolute, total dog shit, made with awful parts that break apart. And this is, honestly, the price they're looking for when you compare it to modern day controllers.
What was the price on this?
80 Canadian. So you're really probably just looking at what it would cost to go buy a PS5 controller at this point. So this isn't super expensive, it's expensive, but controllers are expensive.
Well, the wired one was 80 Canadian, and wireless was 80 Canadian. It looks like the wired originally was 65.
But yeah, I would definitely have a lot of concerns about a company making controllers as their first thing.
100 to get the controller, 100 Canadian, plus the dongle. The dongle is for, I guess, your Xbox 360, Xbox One, PS3, and PS4. So you're really looking at $100 to play it on a console, 100 Canadian. So what is that?
Yeah, so that, and then that, yeah, that is expensive. Build quality would be my concern.
That's $80 US almost, so it's like 20% over. So... But this was what I didn't know this. And if I knew this was happening at the time, I don't think I would even cover the Kickstarter potentially as a lark. This could be cool. Because in the update going back to, was the summer, was this the summer update? Progress report from July 24th of last year. We have hired an intern to help us with assembly. Here are the controllers we assembled this week so far. So on the table, there's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's about 50 or so controllers on this table, maybe less. So I did not realize this would not be a finished good that was being produced somewhere. So they literally, and I got confirmation of someone who used to be involved in the project, ordered the parts, had them shipped to Canada, and were hand assembling them. Not somewhere in a plant by professionals manufacturing them. They're putting these together, an intern is putting it in my hand. If you had told me that, I would not have even bothered with this to cover this as a Kickstarter. Because at that point, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, no production order in place or anything like that. That's...
You're buying the individual parts and you're going to hire someone to put them together? Talk about varying a degree of quality of your finished product.
Yeah.
Maybe someone doesn't screw something in the right way or just... That sounds like a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. So even if the product is good, the quality from one controller to next is not going to be the same potentially. That is nuts. So these recent Kickstarter comments, these are another batch of them. Nothing here too, backer 808. This is from 2 days ago. Did not receive anything from my special custom order. I fear that my pledge of 275 Canadian is lost to beer or whatever. When can we expect an update? Again, these are in the past week. Still haven't received anything. Has anyone gotten this? Brent says a few of us have. It's okay. That's about all that can be said. I really hope these guys get it to me. Never got anything. Me neither. Has anyone got anything? I received my controller, okay, but it did not come with the dongle or a charging cable. How can I even use it without the dongle? Can you send me a dongle? I did pay for one after all. Brent says, the guy who said he got one, the dongle's been delayed. So the one piece if you order the controller to use it on the console that you order it for, you can't use it. Maybe you can use it on the PC, but you can't use it on your PlayStation or Xbox console. So,
and I mean, if they're hand assembling these, I'm just trying to do some quick math. It's 2, 4, 6, 1,000. Let's just say 1,000. We're looking at probably at least 1,200 of these that need to be hand assembled.
The number is 2,100 total. You're talking about, you're looking at just the Kickstarter.
I'm just trying to find out how many are actual orders. Controllers. Yeah, how many actual controllers?
Well, the Indiegogo one is the store still up on the Indiegogo?
I'm just looking at Kickstarter. Yeah, I'm not even looking at Indiegogo
because the Indiegogo has an additional 500 backers, 400 to 500 backers.
Yeah, they're in a spot right now.
Okay, so on Indiegogo they have, okay, let's see, 135 plus 17 plus 170 plus 106. That's about 500 extra. So they're not in a good spot. And if you're on Indiegogo and order it, you're behind the Kickstarter people anyway, who also are not getting it. So yeah.
So I'm sure Pat has something else to say on this, but my whole thing with this, it's something I want to mention, and I'm not going to name names, but there was a YouTuber who was pretty gung-ho on this initially, and he got out of it a while back. I'm not laying any blame on him for the current state of this, but people,
this goes the same for if you get a beta console early or a piece of hardware early that's not yet produced.
This is the same for the people out there who have Polymegas. This is the same for people who are still actively excited for the Amico. You really got to be careful when you're attaching yourself wholeheartedly to these projects,
especially hardware projects. Yeah.
You got to be careful because you can, and I'm not trying to be snarky here. I like a lot of the people I'm even referencing without naming names. Like, sure. I like a lot of these people. But you want to be friends with someone. You want to help these people out. You like the idea, but the more you attach yourself to it and the more gung-ho you get about it, if this doesn't pan out, if these projects don't pan out, you are going to be the face that people yell at.
Even if you're not making a dime off it anymore.
Even if you're not making... When things crumble down. You have become the face of the product because... that's why they want you. Because you're on YouTube. Because you're well-known. They want to attach a level of trust and familiarity to their product. And problematically, if this goes south and doesn't come out, a lot of the people working on these hardware projects get to scurry off into the night because they haven't shown their face. But you're going to be left holding the bag when things fail.
Yeah.
So this is why...
I speak from experience. I was not involved with the Kickstarter, but I was in a video promoting a Kickstarter.
Oh, yeah.
And I got the heat for it, and I didn't make a dime off the Kickstarter, and I got heat for that.
Yeah. And so this isn't, this isn't even...
And that was fulfilled. And it was...
So this is all stuff that we are familiar with, too, a little bit personally. It's a learning experience, but... you gotta be careful.
Because here's the thing. Your risk is gone. You don't have the risk. You're creating a risk for other people. When you're saying, hey, I played this console or I have this controller that's not produced for the mass market yet, you're people will trust your opinion about this stuff. They say, we like you. We like your opinion about games or video games or consoles.
Yeah, remember people follow you because they like you, and inherently they think you are interesting and probably a good person that they trust. You are really, really potentially doing a lot of damage to your trust.
And the people coming to you know that. They know that you have an audience that trusts you and are more likely to buy your product if you have it on your channel or you're part of the promotion. They know that. They're not stupid. That's why you're getting one. That's why you're getting it early, because they know that if you talk about it and give it a good promotion, they're more likely to pre-order it. And at that point, they have the money. You have the risk as the influencer, though, in those weird situations. Again, it's hardware. Putting out hardware and quality hardware, it's not like putting out a game. It's not even like putting out a book. It's incredibly hard to get this shit right, as we keep seeing time after time after time after time after time.
And I'm not incredibly saying hard. Don't support your friends' projects, but, you know, support the ones that you know something about. Have some, you know, support the ones that you've seen something from them in the past that you have faith in. Don't think because someone's come calling that they're your friend. Like,
there's a reason Ian and I don't take this shit early and look at it and promote it. There's a reason we don't take this hardware and say, oh, this is going to be the most fantastic thing ever. We don't do that. We talk about Kickstarters, yeah, of the potential if the thing's going to get made and the product, how it looks. But we never say, oh, this product I have is great. That's not out yet. Go out and buy it, because we know there's risk involved with that. There's risk.
Yeah. And we've even been a little less enthusiastic. I mean, I don't feel bad about it, but people always want to come at us for, I think it was some Commodore handheld or Spectrum handheld.
Oh, we brought that thing up as an aside to a being better shaped than the Coleco Chameleon.
And I think VX Spectrum
is that what
it's
called?
Yeah, and it never came out, and it was a problem. People had all, or maybe it did eventually come up, but people had all sorts of problems with it. But we're allowed to look at a Kickstarter and say, "Hey, this looks good." There's a difference between that and actively doing promotion work
and marketing,
for a company.
People think might be the finished product in their hand when it's not. I was talking about that. Was that the handheld ZX Spectrum handheld?
It was something like that. I'm sure someone who's still salty over it will bring.
We barely talked about that though. Really?
No, I know. But every once in a while, people bring it up.
Oh, I don't. I mean, I don't know if we did a full topic. We barely talked about that. But okay, that's the one. That's the one.
Anyway, so that's all I have to say on this. I mean, it's a shame. But more than anything, I think the learning experience here, the cautionary tale is don't be so quick to attach your brand to a product because you think it looks good and you like it. Maybe dial it back and wait and see what comes of it. And then, by all means, promote it. Promote what you like. Help people out. But
okay, we talked about the Sinclair ZX Spectrum, just to be totally clear, we talked about it March 1st, 2016 for a five-minute segment. We talked about the Kickstarter at the time.
Yeah, I think I said I might have been interested, and then people took that as us giving it the thumbs up, and then that Kickstarter went south.
No, the thing, you can talk about a potential Kickstarter that the product looks cool because you assume that it's going to come out and be cool. Like that's part of the process. You're
that's like, talking about cool. It, like I said, which is different than promoting.
Oh, absolutely. So anyway, so that's the thing. Hardware is tough to get right, and you got to be careful with this stuff. And that's why I said, if it's a console or hardware, don't pre-order this stuff. Wait for it to come out. If it's still cool in the pre-order process, it'll be cool when it's actually out and you can order it. You know, it's just, unless they have a track record.
I was going to say, if someone's got a track record and you want to make sure you get it, fine, pre-order. But there's no reason to drop your money on a, and I'm not trying to single it out, but an Intellivision or an Atari VCS or any of these things, because if they come out and they're successful, trust me, you'll be able to get one.
Absolutely. You'll find one.
You can make that decision then.
There's no reason to give them that money for that early. There's no reason to do that. So, all right, Ian,
Patrick.
We have a Patreon, don't we?
We do. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you put in some monies, and in return, you can get various things. We do the full video podcast. You can watch it all in one go. We do a monthly hangout. I had a lot of fun at my hangout. I think it was last week. No, 2 weeks ago. It was a good one. Good times. We chat. We have fun. I do writings about once a week. I got to get on what I think I'm going to be writing about this week. And we also put up poll topics that you can vote on for a podcast Q&A or a Patreon Q&A.
And I was only two this week. In second place, what Atari era games would you want to see a modern remake of? 41%. That's strong.
That'll come back.
I talked about the Asteroids one, which was modernish. And then in first place, Ian, have you ever fought with friends over video games? And I guess that can mean playing against each other, sharing games, what have you. Any fun stories with that?
So I have two stories about friends getting angry over video games. Both the same friend, Kevin.
Was it really Kevin?
It was really Kevin. Both of these stories were really Kevin.
Fuck you, Kevin. Sorry, go on.
So the one I recall was, I don't even remember what game
that.
We were playing, but we were playing something two player on the Nintendo. And I beat him at it, and I remember him getting very angry and tossing his controller off to the side. And it went over my head. We were like sitting, it was like he had the TV in his room, we were sitting on his bed, we were playing something on the original Nintendo. Might have even been a sports game. This is actually going to come up later. My friend Kevin was the jockey, I'm going to play pro hockey type when he was a kid. He just thought that was something you decided you could do when you were a kid. He was one
probably, probably didn't own ice skates.
No, he did. He did. He played constantly, but
that's
I mean,
street hockey.
But and he played on in high school. But he was just one of those dudes who thought, you know, things were going to be handed to him. In high school, he decided he was going to become a marine biologist because he wanted to swim with dolphins. It's like, okay,
and
sure.
Why is a hockey player? He wants a double life. Okay,
I don't think he's doing anything worthwhile with his life now. But he tossed the controller over my head and was like real angry. And I was like, you gonna get your controller? And he was like, no. It landed on like a on top of like his chest of drawers.
Okay. So was he owned that controller? You
owned that controller. Okay. And he was like, are you gonna get that? I was like, and he's like, no. And I'm like, he's just being a fucking brat. And
you don't remember the game?
I want to say it was Blades of Steel.
Okay.
Want to say it makes was sense. Blades of Steel. Because the game wasn't over, but I just... Yeah, it was Blades of Steel. I had scored again. I was
You're great at NES hockey games, Ian, so I can see this happening.
I actually used to be good at them. I don't know what the fuck happened there. Literally, the ice hockey that I play every year with you is like a completely different game than what I played in high school. I was unstoppable at that game in high school, and my skill just completely disappeared. I have no idea what it is that I'm doing wrong. I cannot fucking play it.
Maybe I'm just good. That's it.
I mean, you are, but I've also played other... I'm just... You are good, but I have also just... gotten very, very bad. So I'm like, all right, well, we got to finish this fucking game. So I go to get the controller, and it's on the back of the chest of drawers. And we're kids at this time. Like, we're talking like
you're
eight,
six,
nine.
Or seven.
I can't. I'm not tall enough to get up there. So I stand on the bottom drawer of his chest of drawers to lean up and get it. And I bring the whole drawer down on top of me.
God.
Everything fell. And I remember standing up, and I remember this clearly. I remember this clearly because I was young and swearing was a big deal. I was like young enough where swearing was a big deal. I was like eight. And I looked at Kevin and I said, you know what? Fuck you, Kevin. And I got up. And I walked out of his house and I walked home down the street. And his dad called me, and Kevin's dad called me, and I hated Kevin's dad. But Kevin's dad was like, are you okay? And I was like, I was sure he was gonna yell at me. And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm sorry. I started to panic. He was like, no, it's fine. He needs to learn how to lose better. He's like, I just wanted to make sure you were okay because a chest fell on you. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good.
Oh, man, you could have tested his home insurance at that point. Ian sues him.
The other story,
small but fierce Ian.
There was a an arcade. I talk about this arcade a lot. Buffalo was strange. We had a Cyber Station in the mall, which was Namco's arcade.
Okay.
So we had a Cyber Station, which was the Namco branded arcade. I think Aladdin's Castle might have also been Namco branded.
Of course you had a Namco branded arcade near you. Of course you did.
Yeah, I was
Mr. Namco.
So lucky. And then downstairs from that, there was in this mall, this was the biggest mall in Buffalo, the Walden Galleria. There was a place called Qzar. And Qzar was a laser tag sort of place. But they had a big, I mean, big fucking arcade. Multiple levels. Like, multiple floors. And it's crazy because this, like, I played all sorts of shit that, you know, was supposedly very rare and hard to find. Like, the Qzar arcade had... the Qzar arcade had the full sit-down two-cabinet Virtua on. It had
the
Sonic the Hedgehog fighting game. It had the full Urguys arcade cabinet. Like, they just got literally fucking everything. Like, stuff that you've never seen anywhere they had. And then the Cyber Station always had cool shit, too. They had, I think it was called Crack and Shoot, which is one of my favorite light gun games. It's a Namco one. Crack and Shoot's cool because it uses actual props.
Okay.
So it looks like you're actually, like, shooting down metal targets and stuff. Anyway, Qzar had a home run derby arcade game. And it was cool.
The one where you bat, the virtual
one.
Where
you actually bat, and it came in like a cage. It looks like a batting cage.
It has
cage.
A net.
Yeah, yes. It's got a net on the back. Yeah,
that was big in like the mid-90s.
It's got the cage.
Mid-90s.
You walk in, you pick up the bat, and you...
Kind of works.
It worked pretty well. But you could game it. Well, Kevin was the druggie. I was the guy who didn't fucking do sports, whatever. Kevin was sportsman. Kevin hated losing to me anything sports related.
Because he was a hockey player.
If you wanted to see someone fucking act like a child, let me beat Kevin in a sports game. He will lose his sense of self. Gotcha. It was just insane. So we go in and he goes in and he wants to play this batting cage game. And I love home run derby shit. So I'm like, yeah, I'll play too. And he's like, I'll bet you $5 I can beat you.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, sure. I was like, why not? I was like, I have $5. So he goes in and he cranks out like 4 home runs and then strikes out, and he comes out and he thinks he's fucking hot shit. And I get in there and I grab the bat and I hit one. And I hit another one, and I realize I've already figured out
the timing,
and like the right flick of the bat to basically get that thing to fucking soar.
Gotcha.
Every single time. And I stood in there, and I don't remember exactly how it worked, but I crushed something like 15 or 20 home runs. And like,
how many pitches you got? Like 20?
It was one of those ones where I think it was like you got 10 pitches, and if you hit all of them, you got bonus pitches.
I remember being 10 pitches for 50 cents or whatever, or a dollar.
I think you got bonus pitches was what it was. So I hit like 15 or 20 of them. I basically nailed all of them, and you could just see Kevin's face, and he refused to give me the $5.
Oh, come on, you piece of garbage.
He refused to give me the $5. Kevin. He thought so certainly that this was $5 that had his name on it because he was sports boy, that he wasn't expecting the person who plays video games and has an understanding of how games work to figure out how to kind of game the system.
Was it just the two of you hanging out, or was there other people?
No, there was someone else there too, and they dogged on him for the rest of the day. He would not talk to me for the rest of the day, and he would not give me the $5 because he said I cheated the game.
Did your relationship degrade after that, your friendship?
That was actually like within the last 6 months of us talking to each other.
So that was a part of it.
With Kevin, there was nothing that happened in that like year to 6 months that wasn't a part of it. But yeah, that was definitely.
What did Kevin end up doing? Did he become that marine biologist swimming with the dolphins?
He ended up being a dad his senior year. And last I saw, he was real proud of his Flip Cup championship.
Okay, then. I got a good idea in my head about this individual.
Yeah.
Peaked in high school guy.
He was very much a peaked in high school guy.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And by the way, I'm not disparaging anyone
I'll disparage you if you peaked in high school.
I'm not disparaging anyone who had to figure out parenthood in their teen years.
No. That's not rough.
No, but it was totally the peaked in high school. He had everything, thought he was untouchable, realized that people get pregnant, and your popularity in high school does not carry over to the real world.
Yeah, sperm doesn't care about your popularity there, Kevin.
So
put a fucking rubber on. Be smart.
Anyway.
Okay, so I got a couple. We got 5 minutes left because I don't think we get this far. A small one is my cousin Andy. They had Atari 2600 when I was like, that's one of the first consoles I ever saw. Like 5. He was a year behind me, like 4, something like that. It was pre-NES. I might have been 6 and they still were playing it, and he was probably 4 or 5. Kind of a brat back then. And he's a part of the three brothers I told you about that had every fucking console, because there was 3 of them. So every console they had, every handheld they had, it was like, So Atari, I want to play Atari. This is Pat, I want to play Atari. I'm like 5 or 6. And no, you'll break the controller again. And I was like, what? I broke the controller? What? I broke an Atari joystick when I'm 5 or 6. You know how hard it is to break those when you're 5 or 6?
I call shenanigans.
So, like, he refused to let me play Atari. So I had to watch him play probably Adventure or Pitfall when I'm 5 years old. And it was like, I never forgot that You're just being selfish not letting me play Atari. And you probably make me cry on the inside. You know how bad it is when you're a kid and another kid says you can't play with something that they have? That could be the worst fucking feeling in the world. I don't think I could replicate that feeling as an adult.
My parents,
I don't think I can do that.
At a young age, my parents really instilled sharing in me. That was like a big thing.
It's bad.
Sharing with friends, sharing, like always, every opportunity they could take to teach me that sharing was important, they did.
So that was bad with Andy. And his brother, Dennis, we used to play Unreal Tournament a lot. I was a bit better than Dennis at Unreal Tournament. Mm-hmm. 2004, a lot better. So we'd play, you know, we'd 1v1 matches. And a lot of times this was him asking me to play. Because I knew if I played him first to 20, Ian, he'd get like maybe 3 kills. Maybe 4 kills, maybe 5, maybe 6. Like, they were never close.
Right.
And so, but luck changed one day. I'm not saying he used a cheat or not, but luck changed one day, and he played his heart out, and he beat me finally one time. It was like 20 to 19. It was like, I mean, like, he must have been, like, playing for his life to beat me there. And he acted like such a fucking asshole that he beat me the one time. And trust me, I didn't rub it in that I beat him because I knew how much better I was at the game. It was like, oh, I played. Oh, you got close. You do a little ribby once in a while you're playing. Oh, I kicked with those rockets. He would not let me forget that he beat me that one time. Like, and it was like, I was like, okay, I got to take it because he never won again after that. Trust me. But I never went easy on him again after that. But I mean, it was one of those things where I was like, you son of a bitch. And my Kevin story to close this out. My Kevin story goes, and I reference this in, wow, the 10-year anniversary of it coming out this weekend. Go watch my Tecmo Bowl video.
Oh.
Because it was us playing Tecmo Bowl. And first of all, Kevin was a fucking front runner. So he liked whatever team was popular. And of course, he was a fucking Bulls fan in New Jersey. Why would you? I don't like the Knicks. They suck. Oh, it's real hard to fucking like the Bulls when they just won 3 championships in a row, you fucking asshole. Traitor. At least like the freaking, you know, I understand not liking the Nets because they were horrible. Not liking the Knicks. Knicks were good in the early 90s to mid-90s. So not just that. That bothered me that he was a front runner. But also the fact that he would cheat. I think I caught him cheating at a board game once. Maybe doctoring the Monopoly money. But that's fine. You should be killed for that alone.
Oh, people who cheat at board games.
You should be drug out in the street and fucking shot.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'll write that into law if I'm president. Executive order. You would shoot you in the streets.
I'll do it.
But Tecmo Bowl.
I'll pull the goddamn trigger.
One day we're playing Tecmo Bowl. And of course he uses the Raiders because they had the Bo Jackson. They're great. And of course you like using the Raiders. But I'm using the Giants. The Giants are an average Tecmo Bowl team. They're good on defense. They're very, very average on offense like they were in real life. So all of a sudden though, we're playing the game next to each other. All of a sudden in his room, I'm getting sacked. My play's getting destroyed. Like, I'm talking 75% of the time. I can't get a playoff. And you usually have a 25% chance, you know, it's of picking the play to crush it. And I'm like getting the ball and punting it. And he's killing me. So just for the heck of it, I'm like, I look, and I see his fucking eyes look down the corner, looking down at my controller while I'm going to select my fucking play. No honor when it comes to board games or Tecmo Bowl, huh, Kevin? Huh?
That's not someone that you...
Peaked in high school, Kevin, as well, probably?
That is not someone
you're
that
not
you...
honorable, Kevin. You're not honorable.
No. No.
It's also the same Kevin I found out, who was supposed to be my friend, was making fun of me at a party that I wasn't invited to in sixth grade or so. Then when I approached him about it, he was like, well, you know, we were just having fun and stuff. One of those type of people. There's no problem hanging out with you every week and whatever, but if he can get ahead of putting you down, he'll do that. Fuck you, Kevin. Fuck you. I know you're on Facebook.
I know you're on Facebook.
Because I'm the type of person, you can change from being a kid, but it's not like that personality totally molts and changes entirely. That's always a part of you. It's always a part of you when you were a bully when you were a kid. That's always a part of you. Or in high school, that doesn't totally always evaporate. You might be able to change that radically. There's always a little part of that of you that stays how you were as a kid. I firmly believe that. So you can't wipe it out entirely.
I think people can change.
They can change. That's always a part of you, Kevin. You cheated at Tecmo Bowl. You cheated. But you thought I couldn't catch you. Sorry. Is that it for this podcast?
That's it. You got a call to make, and I got pork to braise.
We got therapy sessions over our Kevins to go to.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Jesus.
My Kevin wasn't more athletic than me, though. He had a big melon head. But he was semi-athletic, but he thought he was the shit playing basketball or baseball, though. He could bring out his double batting gloves. All right, Mattingly. Okay. All right, Kevin. Sure. Sorry. That's it for the CU podcast.
That's it. We're done.
We'll see you next week.
Yeah. Bye-bye.